I tried so hard not to bring him back.
Not hard enough.
That's what she said. But yeah. Guys, what is going on? We are back to regularly scheduled program on Thursday night. 7:30 p.m. And before
which
we
is
get,
weird because it's 7:20.
Yeah, well, yeah, but we're not early. It's all good.
That's fine.
There's nothing wrong being a little early.
Because our guest needs all the extra time, dude. Our guest needs all the time.
Yeah, he needs a lot of time. He's got some great stories.
Yes, it
does. But before we get to our guests, our wonderful guest today, big shout out to Freddie Honda and Troy for coming on the podcast this week with Popular Loner. An interesting podcast.
To say the least.
It was just a little controversial, but I would sit there to listen to the story. And fortunately, the promoter himself got a hold of me, and he will be on the podcast in the last week of August, which also comes to conclusion. Also, we are not moving anywhere. We are stuck here.
We're still here.
And the beautiful Cortez here in West Central, Texas.
Yeah, we're still here.
For another beautiful year.
For another year.
You sound so excited, bro.
I'm thrilled.
I'm so thrilled. Kill me now. But and on top of that, since you were out last week, we got a new sponsor. We got another new sponsor for the podcast. So we'll mention that during the halftime when we get through the interview here. But this week, guys, we have a special treat for you guys. I got a gentleman here who used to be a ex-firefighter for Weslaco. Not only that, he was one of the first responders for COVID-19 also. This guy has story after story. When I met him outside bringing in, I was Chris. Shout out to Chris Guerra and Uncle Chops.
Chris, not enough detail.
Chris.
Not enough details, man.
When we saw Richard walk in, when I saw Richard walk in, I was like, sweet Jesus. This is not the mountain.
This is
the levee. The 956 levee. Jesus Christ. This guy, I believe this guy was the fire department, bro. I don't know, man. But ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to introduce you to Richard Stubbs Jr. to the podcast. What's going
on,
Rich?
How's it going?
Welcome to the show, man.
Oh, man. Welcome to the show.
I'm excited to be here.
Thank you for being here, man. It's a pleasure and an honor. Thank you for your service.
Yeah, oh, yes.
Pleasure to do it.
Yes,
it's a pleasure to do it.
Especially being the first responder to a horrible pandemic that came in that out of left field, man, and took a lot of wonderful people from the world. But golly, man, my hat tips for you, man. Thank you so much for
being the front line. I was proud to be a part of it.
Good job. So we have you here on our podcast. Live on Facebook, so watch what you're saying, Richard.
Or don't. Nobody's watching.
Just more fun if you don't.
Just let it ride. Just go ahead.
Go right ahead, man.
It's all you. Tell us first where you're from, where you grew up, and how you end up in good old Weslaco, Texas. Go ahead.
You know, I originally come from California. I was raised in a little town called Sebastopol, born in Santa Rosa, California.
Okay.
And you know, it was a pretty normal life. I mean, rode my bike back and forth to school, did what we needed to do. And it was a very small town. You know, we had not a lot going on in the town. Once a year, we had an apple blossom parade. Another time of the year, we had a fireworks show.
Oh, shit.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny that one of those two things, the only things that happened in our city, was what led me to my career. You know, so starting off, going way back to the beginning, since you already got me on all these stories coming up.
Yeah.
Let's go from the beginning one. So I grew up in this small town of Sebastopol, went to Annick High School, and right before I turned 14 years old, the Kiwanis Club would do the fireworks show. They were the sponsors of the fireworks show.
Right.
Kind of like the Lions, Rotary, that kind of stuff. They all had their thing. So, and it happened that year. My dad was the president. And he said, hey, look, I want you to sell some pre-sale tickets to the fireworks show. Mm-hmm. Well, man, talk about the easiest sale. There was nothing to do in this town, you know. So anybody who asks, oh, yeah, $5 less, I'll take them, you know. So I ended up selling a whole bunch of tickets. I think it was only like 186 tickets. And even then, that was more than they had ever sold pre-sale ever in their history.
Wow.
So, and it just so happened that the fireworks show was always on my birthday. So the one I sold it for was going to be my 14th birthday.
Nice.
It was a celebration of me, but I don't know. Some may disagree, but I'm going to stick with it.
Agree to disagree. Correct.
Yeah,
obviously.
Yeah,
it was.
Yeah. They invited me to lunch.
Right.
And it just so happened that day that they invited me to lunch, there was a gentleman there by the name of Dick Wagner, and he was soliciting for a donation for what was called an Explorer program.
Okay.
Now, they still have Explorer programs now, and I'll tell you more about those, but this particular Explorer program was a fire Explorer program. Mm-hmm. And so once a year on spring break, they would go down to Southern California and do an actual fire academy, but it was a fire academy for all kids between the ages of 14 and 18.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, I saw the whole thing. They went to meetings just like regular volunteer firefighters did. They trained like the firefighters did. Once they got to a certain point, they would actually go to actual fire calls like the firefighters did.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah. So I told my dad, I want to do that. And the next meeting was going to be on July 3rd, which was my birthday.
There you go. And firework display and everything.
He said, are you sure? He goes, you know, the fireworks has been your thing every year. Are you sure you don't want to go? I said, nope, I want to go to that fire meeting. So I actually went to my first fire meeting on July 3rd, 1982, and started my fire service career.
All right. Wow.
And it was pretty cool. I mean, this was back in the day before they had the jaws of life. They didn't have a lot of things. Rich departments had them, but us small departments, we had little hand-powered cranks, you know, that one was long and it was red, and another one was short and it was blue, and they were, oops, I just hit the mic, sorry. The spreader, so if there was a car accident or something, well, they loved having teenagers along for that. You know, so that was some of my first stuff. So we'd go to a vehicle accident, have to cut somebody out of a car, and I'd be the power pushing those things. Let's go.
I think Rich was the invention of the jaws of life, man. This man was like, you could rip a car door out.
I was pretty skinny back then, but skinny as this pole here. So I kind of grew into this.
No excuses, Rich.
I can honestly say I'm twice the man I was back in those days. Literally.
We've all been teenagers, and teenagers have no limits.
Yes, exactly.
That was probably what was happening there.
We got a comment right now from Amy Stubbs. I take it this is somebody you know.
Oh, that's my wife. Oh! I love her too. She's the best thing that's ever happened.
La honey está mirando.
Yes,
bro.
Yes.
She's watching.
Where are you? What
are
you doing? Okay.
Well, at least she knows where I am now, right? Yeah. It's live.
Don't worry, man. We'll have them home before 8:30. A big shout out also to Rick Phoenix Monsoon.
What's up, man?
And then we also got First Night saying, is this the new studio? No. Same studio. We're staying, buddy. It's good news. For me, it's good news.
We're having
a move. This guy doesn't like the idea.
We have a move, Knight. We're never leaving.
You got to chase us out with a broom. Anyways, guys, thanks for the comments. Thanks for following, guys. So you're at the young age. You're doing the whole jaws of life thing, gain all that purpose.
Well, yeah, we're going to calls. I mean, we couldn't go into actual fires because, you know, there were some limitations,
right,
but we had our own gear. We went to a lot of the calls. We had our job outside to help support the firefighters that were going in.
Right.
And we trained just like the regular firefighters. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and then of course, when spring break came up, they had that fire academy for us. And so, of course, I was right there, went to that. And then after you did that, that's when you really got to do more on the calls and stuff.
Right.
And back then, you know, it was a privilege to ride in the cab. Now, think about it, being 14, 15 years old and riding tailboard on a fire engine.
Oh.
And they said it was a privilege to be in the front. You guys are crazy. It was way more fun being in the back. Way more fun being on the back. Those times have passed that. Man. Nobody rides on the back anymore.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And I did that all through high school. I mean, I would literally, it kept me out of a lot of trouble, you know, because when my friends were trying out drinking and going and doing all that kind of stuff, I'd still go to the parties and hang out, mm-hmm. but I wouldn't have a drink because if my pager went off, I wanted to go to the fire call.
Right.
You know, well, I wanted to be there. And it so it really kept me out of that, getting into bad stuff. Not that we were bad anyway.
Right.
But what do you think it was that stuck with you so young that, you know, this is what you wanted to do?
You know, I honestly don't know, because in our department, in our small town, again, small town, we knew our police officers by first name. Mm-hmm. And that was because we were friends with them.
Right.
You know,
right.
They were friends with our parents. They were friends with us. Mm-hmm. You couldn't get away with anything, but we were all good kids anyway. So, but some of those guys were police officers and then volunteer firefighters. I didn't even know firefighters got paid until well into it.
Yeah.
So, and I would see what they would do. And of course, fire engines, I mean, come on.
Right.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so when I started, I was like, this is it. This is what I want to do.
Yeah.
Wow. And that's exactly what I did. And I stuck with it, you know, and it worked out really good, because when I turned 18, they said, well, you're 18 now. You've had all the training. You don't need to do any probationary period. You're a firefighter. Wow. I actually went to my first house fire, went inside the house and everything for my first house fire on my 18th birthday, too. So, I mean, my mile markers are on my birthday. Yeah. So right. It wasn't about a year or two after that, I got my first professional firefighting job.
Cool, man.
Nice. Back then, it was called California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection.
Oh, okay.
Now it's called Cal Fire. It's all fancy now. But back then, I mean, and all those big fires you see in California, that's what we would do.
Dang, dude. So, that's crazy, man.
Yeah, no, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And
I got a fellow firefighter, volunteer firefighter. Shout out to Armando Reyes. Say, you know who is? Shout out to the firefighter brother. From a former Donna fire volunteer firefighter, Mondo was actually the search and rescue. When the holes were too small, he fit right in there. So they actually use him, like, you know how Dalmatians are in the fire. Yeah. He was the Dalmatian. So, I'm gonna get it.
Well, I love the volunteers. I mean, I started as a volunteer, and volunteers, I mean, they're great. You know, they're doing it from the bottom of their heart, not because of the paycheck they're making.
Right.
I mean, and that's, like I said, that's how I started too. But then when I said you could actually get paid to do this, I mean, you know, how awesome.
I'm gonna switch to awesome.
Yeah. Shortly after high school, though, I got picked up and it was like last minute too, because the fire season normally starts about May. Mm-hmm. There's my mother chiming in from California. See, we got someone from San Jose, California.
California. What is going on? Mom, this is Mom?
Yes.
Mom? You raised a great son. He's doing great things, man. He's doing great things.
She knows. She's seen him.
She's met him before. He's all right.
Yeah. And then I got Mondo saying, really, Mark, really? Yes, yeah.
Later, Mondo.
We can talk later, Mondo.
Later.
All right. We'll hang it up.
Call him when he gets off.
So while you're up in California, you were probably involved with all these massive forest fires that were happening out there.
But you know, the interesting thing was, it wasn't just forest fires. In fact, my first professional call was a cardiac arrest.
Oh, shoot.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. Oh, and we were pumping chest, and we were so far out in the middle of nowhere that you didn't go to the hospital. You went to a doctor's office. The doctor came from home, met you there.
Right.
And we were his team trying to revive this person.
Wow.
So, yeah. Man, then they really, since I was a rookie and brand new at this job, and it was my first day on the job.
Right.
Man, they pulled a fast one on me. I didn't sleep at all the first night.
Wow.
Because I don't know if you know, I've been a CPR instructor since high school.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
And I knew about this, but I didn't really know about it. I didn't really pay that much of attention to it. Mm-hmm. But when you do CPR on somebody, when you push on the ribs, I mean, you got soft cartilage.
Right. Yeah.
And then you have ribs. So something's going to come loose. They're going to break loose. And you can feel it.
Right, right.
And I remember on this person that I started doing the compression, and I felt it. And we heard it, and my partner that I was with, you know, he was kind of mentoring me through, showing me around, showing me the ropes.
Right.
He goes, just don't say anything. Don't say anything. I'm like, what?
God.
He goes, just keep going. Just keep going.
Oh, my gosh.
So here I am, traumatized the whole time I'm doing this. I get back to the station. I go, what did I do? Did I do something wrong? He goes, just don't say anything. Just don't say anything.
Right, right.
All night long, I was up all night. Did I kill this guy? Was it my fault? What did I do? Because this was my first cardiac arrest also.
Yeah,
right.
I had never worked one before. Right. And finally in the morning, I said, dude, I haven't slept all night. I'm just going to go confess and say that I killed the guy, whatever. He goes, what are you talking about?
Oh, my gosh.
I said, that guy's ribs yesterday. He started laughing. He goes, nah, that happens all the time. I'm just messing with you.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Bloodshot eyes, everything
oh
else.
Oh, my
I was like, oh my goodness. So yeah, so that was my first call. Wow. Our second call, we actually had to go down and get a diver there because there's cliffs. If you've ever gone Highway 1 in California, especially Northern California, it's like following a snake. Take Dramamine before you go on those roads because it's cliff on one side or mountain on one side and cliff on the other.
Jesus Sounds Christ, beautiful.
It was. It's fun to look at, but man, when you're driving.
It's fun to look at, not when you're driving, though.
Oh, God.
Yeah. We had to go get a diver and bring him back up because I guess he had come up too fast and was cramping really bad. And then my third call was a house fire. So I didn't even go on a grass fire my first tour. Because our shift back then was 4 days on and 3 days off. So we would literally go to the station and stay there for 4 days. Yeah.
That's crazy.
But I did that for five seasons. It was awesome. It was a lot of fun.
It sounds like a lot of fun there.
Right?
Oh, God, I killed a guy.
Yeah, well, other than that moment,
that's messed up, man. How dare they do that to you, bro?
Come on now. If you're not getting harassed a little bit, you're not in the fire
service. That's true.
That's
how you get your acceptance on how you handle those kind of things.
I guess firefighter humor, I just don't get it.
Right, I hear that. I got friends.
But that was pretty rough.
Freddie, yeah. What's up, guys? Much love. The show and the guests. Thank you very much, Freddie.
What's going on, Freddie?
And also, Sean Logan.
What's up, Sean?
Well, I like to call the Morgan Freeman of the Valley.
Yeah.
He hates it when I say that.
His freckles are not that pronounced.
I know, but the voice is.
He's got the cool voice, man.
He's
got the cool voice.
Hopefully one day he I'm hoping he gets his podcast on Running Man. He'll give you a call because I'm pretty sure he would love to meet you.
That'd be cool. Great guy, great interviewer, man.
So from firefighter from California, when did you make the move over to the long distance to Weslaco?
Well, you know, it was kind of interesting because fast forward a few years and still remaining a volunteer and stuff. I had a friend that needed to move and I didn't have a lot going on myself. And I really got tired of the way things were going in California.
Right.
Because my buddy and I, we would test with 2,500 to 5,000 people and end up in the top 10 every time and never even be considered for the job.
Oh, wow.
Because, you know, I don't know. I don't want to get political out of it. Affirmative action didn't help me a lot back then. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I came down here. I got an even shot. Man, it's been awesome.
Right.
It's been awesome. And I wasn't even sure. You know, I came down here in 95, August of 95. I started the fire academy pretty quick. FAR Fire Department sponsored me, and I was volunteering with them.
Awesome.
Shortly after the academy, Mission picked me up as a part-time firefighter. Mm-hmm. And then FAR and Weslaco were kind of – they were both doing their tests trying to get me in on their departments, and I ended up getting hired by Weslaco.
Oh, wow.
Which was such a blessing. I mean, I love FAR. I love Mission. I love all the departments. I was even a volunteer in Mercedes for a while.
There you go. Okay. And
they're all amazing. I mean, you know, I've worked really close with Donna, with Alamo, everybody.
Right, right.
All these cities are great. Do I have to mention them all now? I need to mention McAllen also often.
It's on you, man.
I don't think any fire department would miss the Ranger.
Don't forget the Delta. I got them all. Okay.
Yeah, man. That's awesome.
No, I mean it's been an incredible ride. And you know, I came down here, and there's so much opportunity, you know, for a firefighter. I mean, not only did I go through all my firefighter training, made it all the way up to master firefighter, which takes about 12 years to do.
Wow.
I did my hazardous technician or hazardous materials technician. You know, I ended up getting my paramedic and then started teaching stuff. In fact, that's what I was doing all day today is I'm still teaching, even though I've retired from the fire department.
Right.
But yeah. And I've had such great opportunities here in the city. The city's been amazing to me.
That's awesome, man. Shout out to Weslaco, City of Weslaco, man, for hiring great firefighters, man.
They're all great. They know talent when they see it.
I'm pretty sure they saw from far away. We want that guy right there. He signed up for the fire department. Why is he still just make him the chief already? Jesus Christ.
I don't know if the chief would appreciate that. The chief that hired me, he goes, okay, so what can you offer our department that no one else can do?
Right.
And I said, well, if we have a fire in the ceiling, I could pull the ceiling without having to go back to get a – I don't have to go back to the truck to get a tool. He goes, yeah, I bet you don't. You're hired.
You're touching the roof. Exactly. Yeah. Can you do that? Well, I think the man has a point. No, man, yeah. That's crazy. That's crazy, man. So, and you said how many years did you here in West Coast?
I started here in 96, and I just retired March 29th of this year. So that's 27 years.
27 years,
man.
Man, I can't imagine how many things you've seen during those 27 years.
Yeah, and not just in West Coast. It's been quite an adventure. Yeah. Because even though I was working in West Coast, I do 24s here, and a lot of times I would go do 24s on another ambulance too.
Wow.
After I finished, so I'd work 48 straight and then have 24 off.
Right.
Which a lot of guys do.
Right.
So I wasn't only seeing it here. I was seeing it all across Hidalgo County and parts of Cameron County,
right,
too.
Right. I mean, being a firefighter, being a police officer, being, you know, even in the medical field, the toll of that person doing what you do, going out there, fires, even doing medical, you did CPR, all that great stuff.
Yeah, paramedic.
You had the paramedic and all that. The worry that on your spouse, knowing that you're going, there's a fire, shit, I gotta go. And, you know, all power to the spouses, man, to have, you know, people in those fields, man, because I'm pretty sure it's tough seeing the loved ones go into that and then they're just praying they come home.
Yeah, well, she got used to it. I mean, what she didn't get used to was me sitting there and hearing the sirens go and then going and turning on the radio,
right,
and then hearing it escalate and I gotta go. Whether it was a car accident, shooting.
Right.
We had a house that caught on fire down the street from our house. And we were renting the house. So
right.
We went to get the extinguishers they had. You know, you think a firefighter would have good extinguishers.
Not one was good.
But we ended up going down there, and then she sees me, and I saw that it wasn't really anything going on. I mean, there was light smoke coming out. So I went inside. It was just a towel and part of the cabinet. I just stuck it in the sink. But she's, for her, being brand new at this, you know, because we got together in 2009, and she learned really quick that
there you go,
that it's not your regular job.
Right.
You know, you get up and go.
And I've seen firefighters that are off duty in action. This was a long time ago, back in 90. Oh shoot, I want to say maybe back in 93, 92, I think I was still in high school. In back of my house, a house got caught on fire. It found out it was an electrical circuit. Someone put a penny in some circuit to just to run the current.
Yep.
Something simple like that.
And, can you show us how they put the penny in again?
Well, yeah, it's those that are under the age of 18, turn off the camera. But it was something to do with electrical work, and Mr. Brown, who was part of the fire department, lived across street from us, and my mom goes, run across, tell Mr. Brown, you know, there's a fire, to call the fire department. And everybody already called the fire department; they were coming in already. But that man jumped out of his house in just boxer shorts, barefooted, mind you. Runs through the yards. Mind you, there's stickers everywhere, you know, there's spinas everywhere. He's running through it. He goes into the back door, just straight. The house is in flames.
Yeah.
He has no protection, nothing. He just goes in, gets a towel that's in there, a blanket, throws in water, covers himself, goes right in, and he pulls out the people that are in there.
Really?
And I'm all like,
that's pretty awesome.
Wow. Yeah,
that's epic, man.
I'm like,
yeah.
That just... I mean, there is a sadder part of the story. I'm not going to bring it up because it's not my right to talk about that story. But if you know the story of that it was a heroic try and a sad ending. But to see that was something like, wow, man, that's a freaking hero right there. That for somebody to go into flames the way he did with any equipment. I mean, he knew who's going to get burned going in. First, third, fourth degree. I don't know what the correct terms are. But coming out burned like that, and then he came out carrying somebody out, you know, you're like, damn. You go, it just blew my mind at the age of 15, 14 at that time. I was like, dude, this guy's a hero,
that's
man.
Pretty amazing. Shout out to Mr. Brown, man.
Wherever he is. But, you know, and I admire that. A lot of these firefighters that do that, man. And my niece is married to a firefighter in McAllen. And, I hope and pray every day nothing happens to him, man, because he gets called to those things. And, you know, I just hope that, you know, God's on his side when he goes in, man. Somebody's watching over him because it's scary. And then, like I said, like your wife, right here, I'm sorry, Mrs. Stubbs. She already goes, I pray. I pray. That's all you can do. And it's crazy. But not only that, Chu. Not only that, is he doing this, the fire department, you were one of the first responders to the worst pandemic that I, well, in my lifetime, to see, which was COVID.
Yeah.
And tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So we had the Diamond Cruise, which had the first COVID patients that came to the United States. Mm-hmm. And as we know, they all came to San Antonio, right?
Yes.
Right.
So what a lot of people knew was that they were at Lackland Air Force Base. Mm-hmm. What they didn't know was the people that actually had COVID were moved over to Texas Center of Infectious Disease. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a secret, but we didn't want to advertise it because we wanted to take care of the people, not get a lot of press out there.
Right, right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So, and we didn't know a lot about it. I mean, it was a pandemic, you know, exactly. What were we going to do? We didn't have a cure. We didn't have any way to slow it down. Mm-hmm. We didn't even know what the right gear was to wear
exactly,
for it.
Right, exactly.
So, of course, we were way overkill to begin with, but mm-hmm. that's okay because it's better to be safe than sorry, right?
Exactly.
So we would take these people over, we would bring them in, and they would stay there. And the Texas Center of Infectious Disease, TCID, it actually has negative pressure rooms. The nurse's station is negative pressure. And what I mean by that is if you're walking in the hall, that air won't come into the nurse's station. It's got air pushing out in there.
Right, right.
And then the doors, they seal behind, and there's negative pressure rooms so that the rooms hold the air inside
right.
and circulate it and do all that.
Pretty much. Keep it contained.
Yeah. I went up there as part of the management team. And I say team because I never did anything by myself. I was one of many, many people that went up there. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of people from Weslaco go and all the other departments around. I mean, right. I've worked with people from Austin, from New Braunfels Fire Department, from all the departments in the valley and stuff.
Right.
I mean, we've worked together in Orange, Texas. Can you imagine that? You know, everybody from the valley.
Yeah.
We were all up there from hospitals and anything. But anyway, going back to this, mm-hmm. you know, we were still trying to keep it on the down low a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden at the hotel, because, you know, we go work our 12-hour shift and then we come back and
right.
and stay at the hotel and then another crew would go in.
Right.
Well, lo and behold, there was a golf tournament and a tennis tournament.
Oh,
so shit. All of Weslaco is up here. At the time, I'm public education officer for the fire department. God. So I go to all the schools. I deal with all the teenagers.
Right.
In fact, I do teen programs, too, that we need to talk about.
Right, exactly.
And, yeah, so I'm up there and trying to be incognito. Well, I'm not very good at being incognito. I don't know. I don't know if it's the mustache. It was back at the mustache. Yeah. Yeah. Whatever it may be, you know, whatever. My eyes or something. But anyway, yeah, it was hard. Oh,
isn't the sun out right now?
Focus on the story. Focus.
Yeah, so I was trying to. What are you doing up here? Oh, we're just doing some, you know, some exercises.
Right.
We were.
Right.
I mean, we were. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was the beginning of COVID. In fact, I was there. I don't know if you remember that they had the big deal where they released the lady and then, oh, my God, she still has COVID. Bring her back. And they traced her through the mall and all that.
Right.
You know, all it was we were doing testing. I would actually take the samples across to the lab. They would do whatever they needed to do. They were across the street there.
Right.
They would do two tests a day, one oral or two tests every other day, one oral, one nasal. And then it would take a day or two to get the test results back. Mm-hmm. So you had to have three negative results on both tests. So that's like, what, 5 days or something?
Right.
Well, she happened to be there. The test results didn't come back yet. So they tested her a fourth time. And one of the tests was positive. One of the tests was negative. So I think it was just a false test is what
right.
it was.
Okay. Right, right.
But again, there were so many unknowns back then that they did a full recall. They quarantined the guys that walked her out and all that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it was a big deal.
Yeah.
Luckily, it turned out that you know, it was just a false test.
Right.
But that was the beginning of how we found things. And then as time went on, we learned, mm-hmm. you know, and yeah, COVID was a horrible thing.
Yeah.
I mean, 2020, we had so much going on here. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know in the city, or the fire chief here, he's not only the fire chief, he's a paramedic, but he's also the emergency manager for the city.
Okay.
So whenever you go into the disaster mode, the mayor is ultimately in charge, but the emergency management coordinator is someone the mayor assigns to be able to take care of everything.
Right, 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 right.
And man, you want to talk about trying to figure out how to do things. I mean, we would get, you know, we'd have to implement the stuff from the governor, write the plans. We were trying to take care of the employees.
Jesus.
Of course, we were trying to, you know, firefighters, police officers, everybody's trying to go out there and be brave and do their job.
Jeez,
but it was scary for all of us.
Hell yeah, it was.
You know,
yes.
I mean, so many people were lost. We lost so many great people,
yes.
You know, and multiple family members.
Exactly.
And, you know, everything we were doing, we were trying to protect our guys. Mm-hmm. I know that our guys are so dedicated. I mean, I remember talking to them one time and they said, we only have 20 guys total We normally have 60 that are,
right,
that are, you know, through three shifts. Uh-huh. We have 20 total, and one of them's been here 96 hours. I said, you're going to have to do without him. He needs to go home. He needs to take a break, mm-hmm, you know, because everybody was getting COVID. Jesus. And before we even had our surge down here, when it really started getting bad,
yeah,
I had called up to New York because it started there. You know, we had the big surge up there first.
Exactly.
Yeah. I talked to a deputy chief up there for an ambulance service, and they had way more units than us. Mm-hmm. So it was a lot worse for them. But you know, she told me, she goes, look, we had 9 suicides. Oh, we had 11 people that we lost from COVID. We had a lot of people quit. There was a time we were down to 30% of our staff, which is about what we went down
exactly,
to.
Exactly, exactly.
And she said, you know, there's phases. You're going to see phases. And those phases are that people are getting sick, they're scared, they go to the hospital, and the hospital's full, and they start releasing them and so on.
Right.
Then we start saying, well, you know what? You're not sick enough to go to the hospital. It's worse if you go in right now. Mm-hmm. And then there was the final stage where they were getting sick and staying in the hospital and hopefully recovering and coming
right,
out.
Right, right, right.
But a lot did not. And you know, you have those stages where you're bringing those people in, and a lot of them weren't even making it to the ER.
Yeah.
You know? And the guys were seeing that multiple times a day. Jesus. So we had to, you know, I mean, I would make phone calls to Nueva Luz. I got to give a shout out to them. They're a nonprofit for military, police, fire, EMS. Mm-hmm. And they do the mental health services for us. Okay. And Dr. Villanueva over there would come out. And she would come out and just say, hey, we're here, guys. You need anything? You know, firefighters are pretty proud. They try not to, but they, mm-hmm, if they know they have a resource, I think that it helps. At least I hope that it helps.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we had a lot of that going on. And it didn't just happen here, you know. I mean, because part of my job, once we went in emergency management mode, I wasn't even in the fire department anymore. I was just emergency management because I was taking care of ordering staff for the hospitals through the state, getting ventilators, getting all this equipment and all that. So there was a lot of extra things that were going on, making sure we had personal protective equipment and all right. that. So, and I didn't just see it here either. I mean, after we had our surge and everything happened, I ended up getting COVID myself.
Yeah.
I kept saying, I got a summer cough.
Right. Yeah.
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 Well, that was ground zero in our EOC. Yeah, they exactly. still give me trouble. They hear me cough. Oh, summer cough starts. So. Yeah, I took out 3 out of 4 of us on that one.
Oh, my gosh, man.
But I think what saved me is I didn't have a chance to not work.
Right.
I had to get up, you know, I was the designated infection control officer for the city. So, and again, no, I'm not alone in this. Everybody who was working with me was working all around the clock. One of the other guys, too, he was in charge of tracking things. We didn't have a chance. We couldn't stop working, you know. So I'd start getting calls at 6 in the morning from city employees trying to get advice. Which way do I go? Do I test? Do I come to work? All the way up till 10 o'clock at night. And then our firefighters or police officers that started getting sick in the middle of the night, they would call, too, and which way do we go? And we try to put them in a hotel and that kind of stuff to keep them. So, it was a really rough time. And then, of course, we were dealing with all the businesses. And then we were, the vaccines came. And so we had to write the plans for the vaccines.
Oh, my gosh.
Dude, there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot that goes along with it.
It was like the blind leading the blind, man. It was like everybody was going in different directions and we just couldn't figure out where to start. To say, we got to maintain one area first, get this going first, then we'll move on to the next. It's just, it was too much chaos going around.
Well, I mean, it's the thing, it goes back to like nobody knew what the hell was going on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And when you're just, you're scrambling around in the dark and you see any little light, you're going to go towards it.
Man, the first vaccine clinic we did a drive-through over at the high school. We had the high school nurses helping us, including my wife. She was a high school nurse at the time. She's back in school right now, but they were helping us out along with Hidalgo County. Of course, our law enforcement was involved in all that too. Mm-hmm. And man, it was hectic. I mean, people were trying to get those bands and sell them and do everything else just to, you know, for vaccines. Jeez, and then, but we started making it steady. We started doing it once or twice a week here at over at Knapp Medical Center. Mm-hmm. And we'd run 1,000 to 2,000 through every time we do it. And we started getting pretty good at it. We even had the schools helping us, STVT and VGI were helping us out, the nursing school. So the system really started coming together.
Right.
And we actually started helping other cities as well.
That's awesome,
because we had such a good system going. So
that's amazing.
I can't say that it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of work.
Yeah, and
I was glad to be a part of it. I was glad to be trying to, you know, do what I could to be a part of the team that made that happen. Mm-hmm. Because again, nobody could do it alone. I mean, that took a lot of work from a lot of people, and it really worked out good. You know, and that wasn't my only surge going through it, because I actually went up to El Paso surge later that year.
Right. You were saying something about El Paso also.
You got called to the El Paso.
So we got called up there to set up just another ER. Mm-hmm. And I was going to go as a paramedic, but then they pulled me out and had me do another position.
Right.
Where I ended up helping in emergency management in two of the hospitals up there.
Wow, man.
So they were like, okay, so what should we expect? What do we got? What do we have going on here? You know, and I had already gone through it here. I was working with the hospitals and all the agencies here and all the departments within the city and the businesses within the city and trying to help them all out. So
buckle up and hang on for the ride, man. Jesus.
And we had a bunch of guys from Wesco go up there as well that did an amazing job, you know. I can't give our guys enough credit. They're amazing.
Well, thank you so much, man. We appreciate everything you did. Team did in that situation.
Yeah,
it sounds like everyone
stepped up without hesitation. Yeah. And, you know, God bless you for that.
No kidding, man.
And for keeping a cool head through all that. Just hearing that.
I hope my wife doesn't put any messages on saying what kind of cool head I had, because it wasn't always a cool head.
We're going to start asking questions to the wife in a few minutes, man. Wait a minute.
No, we heard her. We pray. I pray.
So before we get back into the more nitty-gritty here, more stories with Mr. Stubbs here, we got to take a shout to our sponsors, man.
Okay.
That's something we got to take care of, because I know our sponsors are waiting for us to say their names and acknowledge them. So first of all, this is the new sponsor I was talking about, guys. New sponsor, a great sponsor, new sponsor of the podcast, Triple J Plumbing. Take care of your residential plumbing, guys. Give these guys a call. They're licensed, man. That's what you want. You want a licensed plumber to do the job for you, do it right, and have everything running good in your area as far as water running, your sewage, and all that good stuff.
So they know what the hell they're doing.
Exactly. So they know what the hell they're doing, man. Nice. So you give these guys a call. Call Juan at 956-854-9622 or call Jerry here at 956-478-5316. Give them a call. They will gladly help you out. Remember, your crap is their bread and butter. another great sponsor new to the podcast, Press Start Gaming.
Oh, my goodness.
Straight out of Mr. Lalito.
Hello. Out
there in Annenberg, Texas, located at 5215 Klosner Boulevard, Unit B. Head out there. Call them at 6254. They do buy, trade, sell, they repair. Give these guys a call. You find them on Facebook, Instagram. Give Lalo a call, man. See what kind of deals they got going on. And on that, he also brings out special guests to his shop, which just about a week ago, I believe he bought a voice actor from Resident Evil. And he brought back down Stephanie Nadal. Came down again.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, she came down. Big stuff.
God bless her.
Great event, man. Yeah. So hit these guys up for any questions on buying or selling or trading games, and they will gladly answer every question for you. Also, another one, Buzz Bull Creamery, guys.
This is a lot.
Infused liquored ice cream. Yeah. Oh, look at even Richard goes like, oh yeah. Yeah, guys, give them a go out to their shop. It's at 529 South Texas Boulevard, Wesco, Texas.
They also have regular ice cream.
Oh yeah, non-buzzed.
Delicious, non-infused.
Yes. Coffee, ice cream, and shakes.
Yes.
Give them a call 956-998-2541. As for Reedy, let her know that Chewy New sent you, man. And I'll see, maybe she can try to hook it up for you guys. She'll try her best to hook it up for you. Also, another big shout out to Anora's Construction. Guys, you're looking for a great to do residential, commercial renovations on either or. These guys are excellent craftsmanship on what they do. I believe they're still up in Houston, still working, I believe. I'm not really sure. Don't quote me on that, but I think they're still working up there, taking care of some more stuff that happened with the hurricane that went through. So they got a lot of work to do. You want to give them a call, 956-363-7195. Let them know Chewy New sent you. Let them know that you saw it on our podcast. I'm pretty sure they'll hook it up with a good deal, man. Just let them know you saw it with us. And last but not least, guys, the Rabbit Hole. Guys, they're going to stay open to the end of the year. They're about to close down, but they have a lot of sales going on. Give them a call at 956-599-0103. Find them on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter. They're all over the place, man. She might be closing her doors down soon, But I mean, you do not want to miss the opportunity of getting some great stuff that she's going to have on sale. So head out there on North Lahoma Road in Mish Palm View, Texas. Head out there and check that out. Also, I want to give another shout out to my buddy here, because I know he does great work. Big shout out to Ink Haas Tattoo Parlor, art gallery located at 533 West Monte Cristo, suite number 3, Edinburgh, Texas, 78541. Guys, this is Freddie. Freddie Honda does tattooing, man. If you see my tats on my arm, I got one of the Supernatural. I got another one with the – actually got it live on the podcast, sure, which Chu loved it, seeing me go through agony.
Yes.
But
it was sweet.
It was bittersweet.
Not bitter at all, just sweet.
Just get a hold of Freddie Honda on his Facebook. Freddie Honda Ramirez, hook up with that guy, man. Great prices, great deals, and they work on budgeting on what you can afford and what you can't, so they can work around your schedule or work around your money schedule and what you can get with your tattoo up front.
Now, don't be one of these guys. Oh, I got $5. What are you going to do? They'll show you the door.
Yeah. No, they'll slap it right on his finger. There's your $5.
Cross the face.
Cross the face.
Yeah. Across the face.
Well, we'll tattoo that later. A big shout out to all our sponsors, man. I really appreciate you guys, man. Coming out like you guys do every week, helping us out. We do appreciate you. And
please tell them Chew New Show sent you.
Yes, please.
And they will tell you, get the hell out
of here. Yeah, that's a horrible show. Yes. Get the hell out.
Why do people keep coming here telling us that?
Why do you keep watching these guys? Big shout out to Brian Davis from this guy's a great guy, man. Love his podcast, The Average Boy Podcast. Yes. Great podcast. Catch him on, I believe, still do it on Sunday nights after 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock at night. 2-hour podcast, but great topics.
2 hours?
Bro, I think you might. Well, I'm not sure if they did one this last week for the Deadpool movie, which, by the way, I am not going to spoil it for any of you guys. But if you have not seen it, you got to go. But it's a great movie.
Everyone dies. It was terrible. Oh, God.
You ruined it for Richard. Right?
Richard, everyone dies, man. And
I believe you want to show these things off that you got. What is it we have here, Chu, that you brought to the podcast today? What's this? Let me hold this up. You want to grab yours over there so you can put it in front of the camera?
Sure, sure.
Ready? Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Right here. Little number one trophies, man.
We got little number one trophies.
From New York.
Directly from New York.
Podcast Network. Hey, these are cute, man. Thank you so much.
They were for sweet.
One week, we got number one. Yay!
We were the number one podcast in New York.
Yes.
Even though we live in Texas. Yeah, we were number one.
Valley, where's the love? Where's the love, Valley?
We live here.
Come on. But anyways, guys.
That was sweet.
That's awesome.
Sweet. Yeah, that was awesome. We didn't expect it, and we appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Just a little shout out to our national audience
there. Yes, big time. Shout out to, I think one of them was in Germany out there. Thank you so much for watching.
We got Germans,
South Korea,
South Korea,
a good one too. Canada, hey.
Canadian too.
Ryan Reynolds, baby. Yeah. But yeah, big shout out. And also the love here from the RGB at number 3, also supporting the podcast. Thank you so
Wherever
much.
Wherever you are.
Be nice, dude. Be nice.
All right. Not even Donna? Seriously? Not even Donna?
Anyways, back to the program with Richard here.
Yes,
man.
Richard, please.
Oh, my God. So, Rich, we finished talking about COVID and all that.
You know, I can't talk a lot about a lot about stories that happen because they're here in town and they're people's lives.
Right.
And that's very private. But I do have one I can tell you, and I got to tell you this one.
Go for it.
This is probably one of the most interesting calls I've had. And those that have heard it before are going to know right away what I'm talking about.
All right.
We know where the Exxon station is up the street by Taco Bell there, right?
Correct, yes.
Okay. Well, I was an EMS coordinator right before I retired, and so I would follow up on calls and see what would happen.
Right.
So I talked to these people after, and I went and talked to this lady that had been – she had a little accident while she was going home from work.
Right.
So I talked to her and said, hey, what happened? Tell me the story. What led up to it? How'd everything go? And she told me, she goes, man, I've had the worst day in my life, I swear. She said, I went to the gas station to fill up with gas. I was already upset. She had one of those blouses on with the frilly sleeves, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So while she's filling up with gas to make things worse, she pulls the thing out. It's still on. It gets all over her arm.
Oh,
yeah.
Shoot.
Yeah. So she was upset. She was going towards Mercedes.
Mm-hmm.
She goes, I didn't even think about it. I pulled out of the parking lot. I was crying at this point, and all I could think was to light a cigarette.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I know. It's hard to believe, right?
Oh, my God.
So she pulls out of the parking lot. She's going on front, and she lights a cigarette. And, of course, her arm catches right on fire, right?
Oh, my God.
She was lucky, though, because as she started going, Westlake OPD happened to be right there in the HEB parking lot. They pulled in behind her, and she jumps out of her car. He sees what's going on. She jumps out of her car. She comes running at him. I mean, her arm's just blazing at this point. He gets out of his car, boom, and he shoots her, and then he gave us a call.
What the hell?
Well, why do you look surprised? You know why he shot her, right?
Why? Because she had a firearm?
She was waving a firearm at him. She was waving a firearm at him. That's exactly right. All right, maybe that didn't actually happen, but it could happen. It could. It could.
I'm going home.
Show's over. Show's Let's over. Go.
I'm going home.
Give me my walker.
Good night.
She had me going, dude. That was going. That's going to be a reel, my man.
All right.
Good night. Sure, I'll make a reel for that one. That was good.
You know what? I'm going to take a nap. You just
finish without me.
Anyway, you look like you're about to ask me something right before I started that story.
And I got people reacting to it. I got Sinalato cracking up here. I got Jerry. What's up, Jerry? My Revenant Watch. Big shout out to them.
Jerry.
Great investigation, by the way. I'm hopefully we'll get to see all the results when they release it. And the wife say, no!
She's heard that story so many times. So.
And here you got Jerry saying, stealing that one. And mom's like, oh, God, no.
I actually got it from my sister about 20-something years ago. So, yeah.
That's a good one, man.
She got me good. That's a good one. So I've used it ever since.
That's going next to the joke that Dolly Parton told Jimmy Fallon. It's going right next to that one. That's another
the grizzly bear one.
Amazing joke. Yeah. Oh my gosh. So we're waving firearms in the air. After the COVID incident, the whole COVID team. What was next in the story for Richard Stubbs?
Well, don't forget that in between, you know, that COVID happened for us, mm-hmm. and then the surge happened in El Paso. But mm-hmm. in between that, there was a hurricane.
Oh, that's right. The hurricanes.
Hurricane Laura came in.
Right,
you know?
That's right. Oh, God.
And
literally, when it rains, it pours. Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you know, here in Westlake, we have what's called an AMBUS.
Mm-hmm.
It's an old Thomas bus that they converted into an ambulance. Well, I mean, it was designed for that.
Right.
But it's an actual Thomas bus.
All right.
And by the way, the only thing cooler than driving a bus... Because if you're driving a bus, they're kind of cool, you know? Driving a bus with lights and siren on through traffic. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's the way to go right there. Anyway, we have this bus, and when we have an assignment, it's a regional asset here. So we'll go take it to fires and stuff for firefighter rehab, or we've taken it to different cities if they have, like, a chemical leak or something like that. And it's an actual ambulance. We used it during COVID also to mm-hmm. transport patients from one facility to another and so on. And so that bus travels all over the state as well. So that's one of our resources we have out there mm-hmm. from the city of Westlake. We also have the boat team that would go out there for water rescues and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then this program, and I really love this program because I know the heart of it came from this city. In fact, let me just go back to that. Chief Lopez, when he was a firefighter, came up with this program where he wanted a regional team to where we all helped each other out all the way across the valley,
right,
in case there was a major medical incident.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So he got together, got grants, got everything together, actually got a trailer that could handle approximately 300 patients for, you know, a couple mm-hmm. hours, things like that, if there was a mass casualty incident.
Mm-hmm.
Great idea. In fact, it was such a great idea, the emergency management coordinator for the state, which answers to the governor, said, hey, give me that idea. And he implemented them all over the state of Texas.
Oh, shoot.
And started pushing that regional concept out.
Right.
And that regional concept started growing. Some other places took it and made it grow.
Mm-hmm.
Then they came up with these buses. Then they came up with all these teams so that we could actually go out there. And like we did in El Paso, we had an actual emergency room that we set up, a mobile emergency, or not mobile, but a temporary emergency room. We set up with tents and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that program started from the idea of the gentleman who is the chief of Westlake right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, kudos to him for coming up with that great idea. And one of the positions they have in there is called MIST. It stands for Medical Incident Support Team. Now, medical incident support team, our job description is be helpful, be nice.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
So we could do anything. I got called one time. I knew I was going to be deployed. Mm-hmm. So Hurricane Laura was coming up. They called me at 8:30 at night. They said, we need you in Texas City.
Oh.
You're going to report to the EOC and go from there.
Right.
Okay. No problem. So within an hour, I had to take off. I take off to Texas City, get there in the morning. They said, go sleep a couple hours, come on back, and then we'll start. Because it was just, you know, the storm was just getting close. We knew where it was going to hit. Right,
exactly.
So we started setting up with all these ambuses and ambulances and so on, and having them go out and evacuate nursing homes and hospitals and things like that that need to be evacuated. Well, then they had the storm going to the north. So they said, okay, we're going to send two of you, because a lot of times we pair up. Our region covers Laredo, Corpus, and the Valley. Mm. And so a lot of times I'd end up with someone from Corpus or something. So they said, we're going to send two guys from Corpus to Houston, two up to Beaumont. So I went up to Beaumont. We ended up getting separated. And my job went from doing all this important stuff to, okay, see all those boxes over there? I need you to find a forklift guy and get them all moved over there. So I went from one job to that. So, you know, you can go from here to here. And I did it. And I took pictures and let them know it was all done. And we were good to go. And then I went back in. And when I went back into the Emergency Operations Center, one of the guys I worked with during the first COVID response from Austin EMS was there. Travis County EMS was there. Mm-hmm. And he goes, hey, man, we're probably going to send you to Houston, but give us like 5 minutes. Well, 2 minutes later, he goes, I need you to come in here. And I said, what the heck did I do? I'm already being called to the principal's office. You know, I got called to the back office. So I go back there and he goes, we have a nursing home. This is 3 hours before the storm hits, mind you.
Right.
We have a nursing home that they just found out about. I think the town is called Newman. I think it's Newton, Texas. Mm-hmm. Okay. He said, we need you to come up with a plan to evacuate 69 people.
Oh.
So I wrote him a plan. You know, and normally you use regular buses and things like that. Mm-hmm. But we did have some nursing homes where they had to send additional buses because of that. So I wrote them the plan that would work. I need ambulance buses. I need five of those things. I need five ambulances and so on. Mm-hmm. And justified it with them. I had an hour drive to get there. Like I said, 2 or 3 hours before the storm. So 1 hour wasted already. Mm-hmm. I got there before anybody else, sat down with the administrator and the DON, and we came up with a plan. And when those buses and ambulances got there, I had a different one at every door. And we loaded them up and we had them out of there, and it was completely dry before the hurricane hit. And that building did end up sustaining quite a bit of damage.
Jesus.
Now, I can't say that the other end where we were taking them to worked out quite as smooth. It took a little bit because they had to find a place them.
Yeah.
But my job was to get them out and get them moving, going in different directions. Some went to Humble, some went to Tomball, some went to Houston from up there. So, you know, this job goes from that. And then the next thing you know, I'm sleeping in the van at NRG Stadium in Houston, wake up with the bright sun, and they're saying, okay, go count how many ambulances out there. Oh, you know, God. So you go from this to that, you know, it's quite a difference with that position. But that position has been so rewarding and so fun. And I mean, they end up, you're supposed to go with a team, but we all end up going alone. And there's a bunch of people that do it, and they do such an amazing job, you know.
Right.
I mean, like I said, we've helped hospitals during COVID. We've helped during hurricanes, doing all sorts of crazy stuff. Mm-hmm. One thing I've learned is if the hotels are starting to get messed up, volunteer to take that job, because then you get to sit in the hotel and pass out keys all day. I don't mind getting paid to do that. I'm open for whatever you got.
Right.
But yeah, but these, I mean, it's really, really a lot of fun because you never know what you're going to do. You know, I mean, I put 1,200 miles on the van the first day that I was doing stuff, going from Beaumont to Newton to Arlington to back down to NRG and over to San Antonio and all that. I mean, but I mean, there's so many people, you know, we have hundreds of people out there doing it. You know, sometimes, a lot of times, thousands of people out there doing it. We're talking about just the medical side on this when it comes to those things. So there's so many things that go on.
It sounds like a Johnny Cash song. I've been everywhere.
Yes.
Jeez, man. Golly, man. That's big shout out to you, man. That's amazing. I mean, so much that you've done, so much that you've given. I mean, I would say giving back.
I don't know about that. I wouldn't call that giving back. I mean, they paid us, you know, the state paid us to do it. So
but
it was,
still, man,
is when you love your job, you're not actually working. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know.
So now I do have a program though, that I do try to get back as much as possible.
Yeah. We want to go ahead and go jump into that bad boy. Yeah.
So,
go ahead.
So yeah, so and this is one of the things I'm very proud of, and I call myself a co-founder of it because we actually started a program called RGV Youth Preparedness.
Okay.
We do have a website, and what we do with RGV Youth Preparedness is we take youth and we teach them about emergency management, self-preparation, so on. A lot of what we do is a class called the CERT class, which is the Community Emergency Response Team. Mm-hmm. So they get a little bit of firefighting, not too much firefighting, because, right, you know, waste paper basket size basic fire. If it's bigger than that, then you know to get out.
Right.
And that's why I love the class as a firefighter, because I don't want people putting their lives in jeopardy.
Right.
There's two medical sections. There's a psychological side of emergencies. There's preparation. And it's amazing. And I say that I'm a co-founder because when I first started these programs with the teens, I started recruiting them as volunteers and then wanted to grow it into something else.
Right.
So I would get teenagers to come help me with programs in the city, like Vial of Life. Vial of Life is something where we go to people's home who have a medical history. Mm-hmm. They actually take a form. They put all their medical history, medications, identifying marks, emergency contacts, anything you would need to know about that person. Mm-hmm. They take it, they fold it, they put it in a prescription pill bottle, put it in the refrigerator, and then they put a Vial of Life decal on the front door. Mm-hmm. And if the medic goes there, and let's say it's at one of these winter Texan parks, because we do a lot of those, the medic can go there and maybe the person's unresponsive and the neighbor found him and we don't know anything about him. Well, we see that decal there. Now we can go right in. We get all their information. We can get them better care, gotcha, get them to the right facility,
gotcha,
make sure that they don't have that end problem at the end. You know, we already have their social and their insurance information and all that. So mm-hmm. that when they do get done with their medical emergency, they don't come home to a stack of garbage that they have to sort out and
send
their insurance and all that.
Right.
So that was one of the many programs they helped me out.
Mm-hmm.
We also another program called the Home Fire Preparedness Campaign, where the American Red Cross had this goal. It was supposed to be a 5-year program where they tried to decrease the number of fire injuries and deaths
mm-hmm.
by 25% over a 5-year period by giving out free smoke alarms. Well, we've exceeded that 5 years. It's been more like seven or 8 years. We're still doing it. And I know that we've done well over 1,000 smoke alarms for free in the city. And when I get my teams together, the American Red Cross loves coming here. In fact, I went to Nana's one night and the chief of McAllen Fire Department was there and said, "Hey, we're about to have our fire alarm event over there." He goes, "They're really giving us a hard time. They say you better be as good as Stubbs over there. You got enough people." He knows me. He's giving me a hard time.
Tough act to follow, man.
No kidding.
No, I mean, I would talk to the, like, STC would send their psychology club out. We'd have National Honor Society. Mm-hmm. So all these kids, you know, kids would come out, some college age, some high school age.
Mm-hmm.
And then the kids aren't used to having responsibility, too. It's like, oh, all four of you are 16. Okay, you're going to be a team. You're going to take care of this. And they're like, really? We don't have to have an adult supervision? I said, no, you made the step to come here. You're showing me something already by making that step and moving forward and doing this. So, and they would do an amazing job. And so they would go out and they would get fire safety messages and do all that. So we wanted to do more. And I had four young ladies that stuck around a lot. There was a few more than that,
mm-hmm.
but four young ladies that stuck around quite a bit. And I said, man, I've always wanted to do this camp. I knew that they had another camp similar. I had talked to some people about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I know how to shelter. I know how to take care of people. I know how to, you know, make sure the meals are taken care of. By the way, my wife would cook at these camps for 120 meals 3 times a day.
Big shout out to the wife there,
yes,
man.
Yes. She's amazing. So we made the RGV Youth Preparedness Camp. And what I did was I found someone that actually had to do with some leadership classes for teens and other things for teens,
mm-hmm.
And had him come down, and he did a lot of the fun stuff and he trained us.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first year was pretty interesting because I had the four girls and then the rest of the group. And I said, all right, you guys are my volunteers right up until camp starts, and then you're campers. You got to go through the whole experience. Then we made the camp happen. Then when they were done, all right, your volunteers have to clean all this crap up.
Yeah,
so they loved it. They loved it. And we do it for free. I mean, we do that whole class. It's like that class I told you about. Well, we do it on steroids. Mm-hmm. Everything they do from Sunday afternoon until Thursday morning is a test.
Mm-hmm.
So they're learning. The camp consists of leadership, component. We have the community emergency response team component as well. We give them that certificate. And then we also have them come in with an abstract to take back to their community. Mm-hmm. So they would come back, they would come with some idea. We want to talk about Zika in our city and get the word out. And we teach them throughout the week how to set up a plan, who to partner with, and do all that. Someone else might say, well, I want to do CPR classes, or I want to do disaster preparedness. So they all came with their own idea. And then we would, every day we take an hour or two and teach them and train them and have people come in that were from emergency management or from, you know, law enforcement or whatever to teach these classes to help. Mm-hmm. American Red Cross would help us out. And of course the fire departments would help us out. And we do these classes. And so all week long, they're getting all these tests and doing things. And nothing, like I said, nothing was easy, you know, because they'd have their backpack on.
Right.
And they'd have equipment in there. And even wearing their backpack, you know, if they that was their lifeline
right.
in this class.
Right.
So if they got up and walked to a restroom, they could go to the restroom, you know, whenever they wanted. Mm-hmm. But if it wasn't an approved break where they could leave their equipment behind, I would get their backpack. And you know how they got their backpack back? They had to sing in front of everybody. So they didn't necessarily like it in the beginning, but they learned by the end that you don't leave someone up there alone. You're a team.
Right.
And by the end of camp, man, the whole camp would be up there singing. If somebody had to go up there and sing, they'd all get up there and just kind of turn into a quick party.
Papa, can you hear me?
It was amazing. I mean, we have so much fun and they learn so much. And, you know, they've done such an amazing job with it after. I have a couple that have gone to different emergency management, have become emergency managers.
Wow, nice.
I had a young lady who went to the AmeriCorps and was helping out. She was helping out with Habitat and of Humanity, I think, in Wyoming, okay. and then went somewhere else.
Okay.
I don't know. I probably got it all screwed up, but she was up there somewhere.
Right.
Girl who never left Texas in her life, she didn't even hardly leave the valley. And now she's going to California, Wyoming, and all these places and helping Afghan refugees. That's when that was all going on, when she was part of that.
Right.
So, you know, it's not something that we're just giving them right now. And this is, if they never use it again, they will still use what they learn the rest of their life for practical things.
Wow.
And they get it in the valley. Like I said, they get it absolutely free. So with me getting ready to retire and that kind of stuff, I didn't get to push as much and I didn't get to do it this year, but we're planning on getting it hard again next year and getting it going. And we got the full support of the city.
That's awesome.
So keep track of our website, RGB Preparedness. But yeah, it's such a great program. And these kids do such an amazing job. And I love the end game. I mean, even firefighters, we have firefighters and everything, you know, so
that's awesome.
And it's all for teenagers between the ages of 14 and 18.
That's
amazing.
Man, that's amazing, man.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So,
yeah, they're doing it.
So what, the website again that they can go in and
RGVYouthPreparedness.com.
There you go, guys. Mm-hmm. Jot that down, man. I mean, you got young teenagers just laying around not doing anything. Send them to this so they can learn something.
It gives them something to go for. Exactly. It gives them something to strive for, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome,
and I mean,
man.
We have all levels of kids. We had one young lady that just wanted to get done and go to medical school, and I could tell she was kind of not into it in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And so we found a way to engage her and give her some tasks and, you know, to involve her. And then the other one that's quiet, that's been shy, that's never talked before. You know, so we have the whole spectrum of someone who's willing to talk and do everything, but is so ready, so way up here. Mm-hmm. And then you have others that are on the social scale that are just kind of real quiet and not doing things. And then all of a sudden there's a room of 120 people coming around and a voice you've never heard before. And they stand up and they're talking about their experience, you know,
that's
and things
awesome,
that they're learning.
That's awesome.
So yeah, it's so cool. I mean, it's such a great program. And we do it right here in Weslaco at Camp Thicket.
Okay, cool, man.
Oh, so, wow.
That's good to know.
I was just wondering about something. I know from everything that you told me, it sounds like you're very community-minded. You don't mind building those connections.
Teamwork makes the dream work.
Yeah. Would you say that that's kind of been, that's like a part of who you are, or has that been built throughout your career? Like you've learned to do that.
I think it's always kind of been a part of me, but really, I mean, that's what you have to do to make things work.
You know? Absolutely.
Nobody can do it by themselves.
Absolutely.
I mean, I can call a lot of people, you know, I mean, I may not be the smartest guy in the world, but I can really look like I know what I'm talking about when I have a good team that really understands and knows what they're doing. You know, right. I don't need to know it all. They need to know the parts that and fit in right. and fix it. And, you know, I mean, through training and through everything else, I try to bring people up to where I am. It didn't matter where I was. If I was a driver on the fire engine, I wanted that firefighter to learn how to be a driver if he cared. Maybe. You know, when I was a lieutenant, I wanted to be able to, I would tell my guys, we don't want someone having to come over here and be lieutenant. We take care of our house. So you guys need to know my job, but you need to be teaching that next guy your job. Right, that's the way right. it goes. And really, I mean, you look at everything. If something's going to work, you got to do it as a team.
There you go. Yeah,
you got to do it as a team.
That's the most important thing. Let's do it as a team, dude.
But what if someone is the obvious superstar of the show?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, wouldn't, and the show wouldn't be half as good without that person.
Oh, my God.
They what about that?
They would move on.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry I can't be here every day.
Thank you.
Oh, firearm. Oh.
Firearm.
Oh, I get it.
Let's see if you put fire on this arm on the video.
Yeah,
we're at an hour and 4 minutes into the podcast.
Oh,
guys.
God. I should have been in bed like half an hour ago.
I got one more question, which I like to call the Oprah question.
He thinks it's more important than it is. Go ahead.
It is important, bro. No, it's very important.
Sounds like great, but it's not.
So, how tall are you? No. When it's all said and done, through the years, all this work you've done through your years, when it's all said and done, what is it that you want to be remembered by?
You know, I personally don't have to be remembered. I just want people to have good memories of things that they had on their worst days. You know, I really tried to keep a chipper attitude no matter what time it was. I really tried to talk to people and be human with them when they had their worst day, because that's when we see them. Most of the time we would see them on their worst day possible. And I've had people that I see, you know, I live in the town that I worked in and I go to the DMV and, oh, you picked up my dad. Was I nice? Is he okay? How's he doing? You know, was everything? Oh, yeah, it was great. You know, I saw a family at Howl at the Moon in San Antonio. Hey, you came to our house when it came on fire. And you told us, man, it's not that bad. You guys are all safe. And it's just sheetrock and things like that. You can fix it. It's not going to be a problem. Awesome. And you're right, you know. They don't need to remember me. I mean, they, like I said, they tend to remember me. And again, I don't know, maybe it was the mustache. I don't know. Again, I don't know what it was. But I don't need to be remembered. I want their day that was the worst to have at least some light in it, you know, because I've gone through things. Everybody's gone through things. Mm-hmm. And you remember what people say. You remember what people do. And we don't always say the right things.
Yeah, right.
And that probably keeps me up more than anything else is mm-hmm. somebody that I may have hurt along the way by saying the wrong thing, trying to be right to them, but
right.
saying the wrong thing. But yeah, they don't need to remember me. Just as long as I made their worst day possible a little bit better, that's good enough for me.
I like that. That's a great, one hell of an answer, man.
That's a hell of an answer.
Thank you absolutely. So much, okay, Rich, for coming on, man. We're going to have to get in contact with you again to bring you on, see what the update as far as...
We'd love to have you on the show anytime.
Make sure the firearm is okay.
That too. That for sure. But have you come back and talk to us more about the program you have going on, how much it's growing, how the program is going.
Do you have any social medias or things that you like to plug before we go?
RGV Youth Preparedness has our website. I need to update it. We usually update it as the school year starts.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But there is information there. There's videos there. And you'll see different things. I try to showcase the kids, like whenever I would do an interview, try to bring them with me when they possibly could, like on Channel 5 or Channel 4, whoever was doing the interview. So,
right.
So, you know, it's all about them. It's all about them. Somebody gave me an opportunity when I was 14 years old, and I love to be a part of giving them that same opportunity.
There you go. That's about giving.
The thing is it's hard to do with one person. You know, my four people have kids now and have moved away and done all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I need a full team that can help me out. So mm-hmm. if we got people that want to come out there and volunteer and help with these programs, it's all done through donations. That's how we keep it free. So if anybody wants to donate to RGV Youth Preparedness, we are tax exempt. So, you know, any of that information, you can get a hold of me right through our webpage. it's not a problem. Just look me up and you'll find me. In fact, I'll probably put my number on there.
There you go.
Now that I'm not at work anymore. But even if you call, you'll still get the fire department.
Okay.
They'll call me because the fire department, the city is still very involved in those programs.
So. Awesome.
Excellent.
Good to know.
Yeah.
I'm sure now that you put it out to the community, the community will respond.
Yes. Sure. I hope so. I really want this camp to get going again next year. Like I said, you know, if I didn't, the one time I didn't have the time, we didn't have the people show up. So we needed more people involved to get the word out there to get the thing moving and keep it moving.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So, like, once again, Rich, I appreciate you coming out, man. Great conversation with you.
If you wouldn't mind, you know, if you get a chance, shoot us the link and we'll put it onto our Facebook.
So we'll share it to you right now.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. Appreciate. And just to close the podcast, Mom has something to say here.
Mom
says, "Proud mom moment." Yes.
You know what?
Well said, Mom.
I've seen my kids on there. I've seen my wife on there, and I've seen my mom on there, and I really appreciate and love them. Their support is amazing. You know, without them, I couldn't be what I am today. So.
There you go. Well said, son. Well said. A nice hot meal when you get home. Man. Oh, there you go. The wife has the pigeon too. I'm so proud.
There we go.
No, man. But like I said, once again, man, I appreciate you coming out.
Thank you so much for being here.
We got a chance to finally get you on the podcast to talk to us a little bit, man. And I know we've been really anticipated. We got our lines crossed a little bit, but we're here.
We
heard your story, man. We hear everything you're doing for the city and everything you're doing for. Shoot, I have to say for the whole state of Texas, not only that.
Well, I'm not done yet.
You're never done.
Hope you do more, man.
And remember that there's many, many people across this valley and really across the state of Texas that are doing the same thing.
Exactly.
So it's not a single man effort. It's a lot of people that do this.
Yes, sir.
And they all need to have credit for it. They're still going.
There you go.
I tapped out. They're still going.
Well said.
But I'm not done yet.
So. You may hang on. He ain't giving up the belt yet, guys. But like I said, once again, Richard, thank you very much, man. I appreciate you coming out. And we hope to have you back soon again, man.
Come back anytime, man.
Anytime.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is our podcast for today. Great guest.
Amazing guest.
Great guest.
Great story. Richard,
man. Gentle giant. That's all I can say. The gentle.
She deserved to get shot.
Well, I'll give you that one.
Next Thursday, what's going on next Thursday?
7:30 p.m. We have a band called The Ghost of Us. We'll be on the Tune Your Podcast.
Oh, nice.
A nice rock band from the Valley.
Finally
got a rock band in here.
Nice.
I mean, we've had rock bands before, but now we got another rock band.
Another rock band coming.
Yes.
I know that they're out there.
They're out there. Let's get them on the show. We know you're watching.
Let's get them all on the show.
Yeah, we got to get them all. You know what? Bring them all in, man. We'll put them all in. Hold a huge venue. No, I'm just joking.
No, I'm just joking.
Not enough room. We want the place for another year.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for tuning in. Guys, if you are watching on Facebook, this video will be up all the way until Friday. It will be torn down and it'll be moved to YouTube so you can go watch it, subscribe, follow, share, all that good stuff. I really appreciate all of you guys tuning in every single week, especially when this one's not here. Even though he is life of the party, I have to admit it. Yeah, right. But
you're doing the Lord's work. Even though the show sucks when I'm not on it.
Shut up, dude. Let me finish this segment.
It's all right.
Guys, we will see you next week at 7:30 p.m. Tune in. It's going to be a great one. Any last words, Jim?
Firearm.
Firearm it is. Remember, wave it in the air.
Like, please,
kids, don't try this at home. Hey, Jim, we'll see you next week. We're Tanner off.
I've been Jim.
And I will be rapping with that deep voice. He'll be laying down the facts. Quick and raw, choose one, I see it all. Never misses a beat. You breathe the high.